Oh, I wasn't unmuted. Okay. Hello, everyone. All kinds of folks online, all kinds of folks in the Zendo. This is great. I don't know what it is, but somehow the webcam is zoomed out this time, and I'm like very far away. Go figure. Okay. I will go around and greet people on Zoom, and then in the Zendo, each person can introduce themselves and we'll repeat names. So I'll start with Ingrid, Shoketsu, Bob, Melissa, Phil, Christina, Tyler, Mary, Brian, Paula, Pat, Lisa, Suvi, Lori, Karen, Ellen, Amelia, Dave Q, Joan, John, Chris, Mark, Scott, Sabrina, and Ruthann, and in the Zendo, Coral, Kurt, Katie, Kazu, Jim, Dennis, Alice, Leah, Vikas, Ted, and Judith. All right, cool. Oh, I case in terms of announcements, our Tuesday evening precept study is going to begin not this Tuesday, but a week from this Tuesday, so March 15th, and it will go for 12 weeks, and June 5th will be when people who have been attending for, at least 3 to 6 months, ideally longer, you have an established practice with the Sangha, you might consider receiving the precepts and formally becoming a Buddhist. And that is a Sunday ceremony that takes place on a Sunday. But you are welcome to participate in precept study no matter what. You're welcome to start using the precepts in your life no matter what. There's more information about that online and in the newsletters and stuff like that. So, yeah, but if you do want to receive the precepts this year, then try to participate in that Tuesday study. You can read, you can listen to recordings of the classes, but it's really nice to do it live. And if for some reason, Tuesdays, if you're, like in an Eastern time zone or something, and Tuesday evenings just do not work, one other option is there's a Thursday, ordinarily it's a podcast discussion group that discusses my podcast episodes, but they, for the duration of the precepts, they'll study the precepts along with, keeping pace with the Tuesday group. And they meet a little earlier in the day. So it's like 4 p.m. Pacific as opposed to the class starting at 8 p.m. Pacific. So you might consider participating in that. Any additional things I should announce or questions? All right.
I do have a
Yeah.
question.
Yeah.
Given the mask mandate is going to be lifted, what will that mean for us and for here and regardless of
Yes, so
anything
Ted
else?
was asking about for those of us who are local and attending in person or considering doing that, what about the state mask mandate will be lifted in another week or two. And we have actually a Brightways and board meeting this afternoon, and I figured we'd talk about it. What I'm leaning toward is I'm leaning toward also because we, require vaccination. We keep a list of everybody who comes. I'm leaning toward lifting the mask, making masks optional. But I thought it might be nice to do a quick survey of the Sangha, particularly anybody who has been attending regularly or is thinking about maybe doing so, just, you know, being able to, was just during Zazen, thinking of the different categories, right? like I've been attending regularly and I'd love to not, you know, have masks be optional. I've been attending regularly. I really would prefer we continue to use masks all the way down. So keep an eye out if you are local, you have a chance to weigh in on that. And just in case, you know, maybe the majority of the Sangha is like, yeah, let's just keep the masks on. That might affect what we do. So stay tuned. All right. So today, first of all, I wanted to do a short bearing witness to the suffering in the world practice. But after that, will be a Dharma Q&A. So I was looking down my list of Dharma topics, and the last Q&A was like 3 months ago, and the questions that people submitted at that point gave me fuel for, like, I don't know, like 8 Dharma talks. It was great. Because sometimes, you know, I sit and I think of what should I talk about, and my mind goes on its own, you know, ruts. I have certain things I think about, and I don't necessarily, you know, think about what other people are curious about or would like to hear about. So keep in mind, we'll take about 5 minutes to do that, and the people in the Zendo have little pads of paper and pen that they can jot a question down. It's not obligate, you know, you don't have to. And then those of you on Zoom can similarly take a few moments to reflect, and you can either, you know, just have your question and be ready to raise your hand and ask it, or if you prefer for it to be rather anonymous, you can send a chat just to me, or let's see, let me rename myself. Bright Ways In. For now, I'll just rename myself Domio for simplicity's sake. And so then if you can, you know, there is a way to send a chat just to me with a question if you don't want to just blurt it out. But first of all, just to take a few minutes, seems appropriate to bear witness to the suffering in the world. To the people of Ukraine who face the destruction of their country, who face death and injury and loss, who face having to leave their homes, their lives, their country, and become refugees, dependent on the generosity of strangers, and if they cannot leave, living in fear of Russian oppression and what's going to happen. To the people of Europe who live in fear of how the war in Ukraine might escalate, who struggle within their own countries to make them open to desperate refugees. To the people of Taiwan and other places who watch with anxiety how Russia is able to attempt a complete takeover of a sovereign country, because China might be emboldened to aggressively crush any move toward greater independence there. To all the people of the earth who live under the specter that the unthinkable use of nuclear weapons could again become a possibility. To all the people and beings who have suffered in war and are suffering in war over the last 50 years, including those in conflicts we may tend to forget about, including those in Afghanistan, Syria, Myanmar, Yemen, and Ethiopia. May we open our hearts to the suffering in the world, neither avoiding it nor identifying with it, but allowing it to move through us, to awaken our compassion and humility, to soften us and make us ready to respond when we have the opportunity. May we bear witness to the suffering of other beings so that they are not alone. And may we carry the awareness of them in a tender place in our hearts as we go about our daily lives. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. All right, so let's take 5 minutes or so. Take some time to reflect on whether you have a question. Oh, I had a little suggested, like, such as questions about teachings that are you're still wondering about. No self, Buddha nature, emptiness, absolute and relative. Questions about meditation, practicing with daily life challenges, relationships, work. Questions about our tradition, our forms, like chanting or ceremonies or whatever. Questions about moment-by-moment practice throughout the day, mindfulness, or unusual challenges like anxiety, depression, illness, or grief. So there's some ideas. So those of you in the Zendo, feel free to just take a pen and a piece of paper. And those of you on Zoom, and if go ahead and just submit your question by chat if you want to do it that way at any point.
You could just
bring it up and set it there.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Well, got lots of questions that will, at the very least, provide fuel for future talks. So today is going to be just kind of a random, like, pick one out of a hat kind of thing. Yeah, just tear it off and give it to me. So let's see. So interesting. There's a lot of questions in here about our chanting service and the various gongs and bells and things that we chant and Wow. Cool. So I've kind of given a once over of the questions that I got in the Zendo. How should we go about this? Maybe we'll just take one from the Zoomiverse and then I'll pick one from the Zendo. So anybody on Zoom, I got a couple questions in the chat, but they might be good ones for a later date. So anybody just feel like raising your hand and asking a question? No one? If you change your mind, you just raise your hand using the reactions button at the bottom, and then your hand will just, and you could put it on speaker view now in case somebody does ask a question. Well, I did, in terms of our chanting, I thought what might be fun at some point was to show you guys a video of Japanese, like a Soto Zen chanting service in Japan, which then of course those of you on Zoom could see, and then, you know, at least we'd see it on the screen and hear. Because, so for those of you who aren't aware, on Sundays at 9:30, we start with a traditional chanting service that goes until about 10, and then we have Zazen. And actually, the way that we did it at Dharma Rain and the way that it's typically done is often Zazen is first, and then there's chanting service. But I deliberately make the chanting service first so that you don't have to come to it if you don't want to. So we have a very, in our lineage, in the Dharma Rain lineage, we have a very open-handed attitude toward the Dharma, where it's like, you know, this is part of our tradition. If you like it, that's cool. Participate in it. If you don't particularly like that part, that's fine. So basically, you can just come, and you're respectful. You can participate in whatever you want and refrain from participating whatever you want. So sometimes I felt like people, when they came for Zazen, then they wanted to stay for the talk, and then they were kind of stuck having to do the chanting when, you know, some people were like, eh, you know, people who might be uncomfortable with, you know, organized religion or ceremony or ritual. So this way I know if you're here at 9:30 for the chanting service, you want to be here. So that's cool. So we enjoy it. So we do lasts about a half an hour, and it starts with bows and it ends with bows, and there's several very important, well, a sutra is a teaching that we say was given by the Buddha, and a shastra is a term that we use for scriptures, if you will, that aren't, they were by other ancestors. So so what we chant during the, I guess you say the Heart Sutra is technically a sutra, I guess. But the other things are important than shastras. There were actually poems, teaching poems, written by Chinese Chan ancestors. So there's, I think, three. So there's the precious mirror samadhi, harmony of difference and sameness. Oh, and then the gateway of compassion is from the Lotus Sutra. So there's stuff to be learned about each of these things that we chant, which is cool, and we should study them at some point. But there's a sweetness to our chanting practice where we're not worrying about the meaning or understanding of it at the time. The practice is just it's supposed to be a meditative body practice kind of thing, a sound practice. And many of us find that if you just chant these things without necessarily, you know, understanding them immediately, these phrases will come to mind later on. You gradually memorize them, to more or less. One of the things I find is really fascinating is that after having chanted more or less the same set of chants for, you know, 25 years now, it's really what really throws you for a loop if the translations change just a little bit. So there's different Zen centers will use slightly different translations, and that's what's confusing. But so more or less chanted these for 25 years, and so I have them memorized, but I couldn't just sit here and recite the whole thing for you. I have to be chanting along with other people. And one of the things that's really fascinating is this whole sense of kind of being in the body and being in the flow. And I have this experience when we're chanting the line of ancestors. So this is, we chant all the way from Shakyamuni Buddha down to the most recent ancestor in our lineage who has passed away. So you don't get added to that list until you pass away. And so we chant all these, I think it's about 85, 86 names at this point. And so I've chanted these all this time. And if I try to chant it from memory and do it deliberately, then I can't do it. But if I settle into the body and I don't try to remember, the next ancestor's name will just come to my mind before, as soon as we're still reciting the previous ancestor, and the next ancestor will come up. So I love how that's like this physical experiential test of kind of presence and mindfulness and, you know, getting out of our heads. So, yeah. There were lots of questions about, like, what are the significance of the bells? So I did talk on Tuesday. Tuesday class happened to be on the lineage and ancestors. So that was a chapter in Kyogen's book about that. So if you're more curious about it, you can listen to that. I also have some podcast episodes on lineage and transmission and stuff like that. But I realize another talk and episode would be valuable on kind of reverence for the ancestors. Why do we bother to chant this lineage, and what kind of attitude toward the ancestors and the lineage are we expected to have? Should we have some kind of feeling or whatever? So it'd be worth talking about that. But suffice to say, somebody said, what are the little, I don't have a bell in front of me, but there's a gong that we ring for chanting service. And during the ancestral line, there's certain times when we hit the edge of the gong with its like thunk sound. And it's only for certain ancestors' names. And this would be an interesting thing too, to just kind of look historically at this list. And those strikes are at very significant I mean, every ancestor is significant in the sense that, you know, they passed the lineage down to us, but particularly at obviously Shakyamuni, Buddha, and then Bodhidharma, who brought the tradition to China, and then the sixth ancestor after Bodhidharma, Daikan Enno, who is the he was the illiterate woodcutter who achieved awakening and kind of proved that this Zen lineage was different, right? It wasn't dependent on all kinds of knowledge of sutras and this and that. It was something deeper. And so Daikan Enno, and then obviously the Dogen and Dogen's teacher. So there's two of those. And then, so Dogen brings the tradition to Japan. And then there's an ancestor somewhere in the Japanese, in the middle of the Japanese list, which I think it's in the middle of the Japanese list. And he revolutionized or reformed the way that the Dharma transmission was happening. It had started becoming that if you were going to become an abbot of a temple, they would just say, you're transmitted by the previous abbot, and it wasn't no longer a meaningful thing. So he kind of reformed that and made it, you know, that it really was, again, a sincere teacher-student thing. So anyway, so there are significant reasons why we do those little things too. But I've noticed at other temples sometimes the celebrant, the doshi, who's on the bowing mat in front of the altar, will just be doing continuous bows throughout the entire ancestral line, not just at certain ones. So, I will say more about chanting at some point. But any particular questions arise that people want to just pop in with regarding that? Yeah, and would you, if you're in the Zendo, please come sit in this chair, and you can move that bell off.
I was just going to ask if there's any instruments that are used as part of chanting. I think the Rinzai sect uses shakuhachi. I'm wondering if there's anything similar.
You're not just talking about our instruments are at my house right now because I want to do a recording of our other chanting service. I haven't gotten around to it. But we have one of the mokugyo, a big wooden drum that does the rhythm, and then a big gong. But no, we've never, generally the chants are not musical. They're very atonal. And this is part of what I wanted to get across too by sharing a Japanese version of this as well, because as Westerners, we think we need to sing, right, or harmonize or something or sound good, but I don't really know actually what the Chinese chanting sounds like, but I know what the Japanese chanting sounds like, and it's the energy is more important than the sound. So it's very much like it's about breathing, it's about a deep breath. And somebody pointed out to me, like it's actually a calming practice, because what you do is if you take a big breath of air and then you chant as long as you can with that breath, and you take a big breath and you chant as long as you can with your breath, that you're actually, you know, you're slowing down your breathing and you're sending a message to your body that like things that you can calm down. So it's like this, you know, it's just like and people in the monastery, the monks will just like, they'll just random different notes. It's a very atonal, but it has actually a slightly pleasing quality because nobody's like kind of trying to harmonize and being unable to. They just go for it. so So it's not musical, but interestingly, my Dharma grandmother, so Kyogen and Gyokoko are my teachers, and Roshi Kennett was their teacher, and she was a classically trained musician in England and was an organist with the Church of England, and before she went the Zen route. And so when she set up her monastery in Shasta, California, she put many of the chants to like a plain song style melodic chanting. And they're actually quite beautiful. And she even did four-part harmony, which is not traditional plain song, of course, but so the Heart Sutra, so the very ones, the Precious Mirror Samadhi, the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, she put to this music. It's very simple, but frankly, you need people practiced, like, you know, just random people coming in off the street. So my teachers phased this out because it's fine if you have a monastery full of monks who can practice this, but, you know, just to have people come in and be able to jump in and participate is not the greatest. So we just went back to the atonal style. But there's something very, you know, there is some, I like to bring those back in sometimes for some of our ceremonies because the music touches you in a different way than the atonal chanting.
That was the idea of Kachi. It was supposed to be a vehicle for meditation, not really music. That was part of my personal problem. I like the music, you know, and I didn't get the intended portion, I guess. So.
Any other questions kind of rolling off of these questions? So, the Zoomiverse has been quite quiet. Surely there's a question out there. All right. Well, here's one. As our teacher, do you do what is called pastoral care, or what Christians might call pastoral care? Maybe conduct a member's funeral or birth rites or other kind of life events other than Jukai. This is a very, it's not that this is such a difficult question. It's bringing up another question for me. It makes me think about what I would love to see Bright Way Zen become. Those of us who trained, I've spent some time training at a bigger temple, like I did at Dharma Rain, and I've spent some time in monasteries and stuff like that. I am aware of how much we could be doing, how rich this tradition is, how many roles are possible for people in the Sangha, things for people to learn, additional forms for us to adopt. So these are forms, are established ways of doing things. And sometimes, you know, depending on how you feel about this kind of thing, you may feel like, ugh, like not particularly like forms, because forms end up feeling kind of formal. Like you come into the Zendo, you bow in front of your seat, you bow away from your seat, you sit down facing a particular direction, blah, blah, blah. That, you know, sometimes we feel like there's a that there's a balance to be maintained between being welcoming and, you know, emphasizing these forms. But if these forms can be offered in a way that is open-handed, it provides a lot of opportunity for learning and for depth and what have you. So, you know, basically just think of everything that we currently do and offer in terms of chanting, in terms of ceremonies, in terms of study, could be totally amped up. I mean, I can only do so much. I'm just one of me. And my temple had two teachers and then many senior students that started taking on teaching responsibilities and stuff. So as a temple grows, it can do more. But for example, in our ceremonies, which, you know, if you've been in the Zendo, you'll have participated in, and if you've been on Zoom, you'll start to witness, and we're gonna come up with ways to for Zoom folks to participate in some way. These are vastly simplified ceremonies. And even the ones I learned at Dharmarain are vastly simplified. There are, you know, if you were a monk in Japan, you can spend 8 hours a day practicing these ceremonies. And, you know, you may think, well, what's the point of that? But there is something really, really beautiful about some of these forms and ceremonies. So one example is before any of our, like the festival of the Buddha's birth, the commemoration of his passing, the festival of the hungry ghosts, these major ceremonies we have, we would do what we call a daimisho offering beforehand. And so the celebrant would come in, there'd be at least two assistants, we'd have prepared sweet tea and cookies, and you know, the one assistant would pick up this offering and hold it up, and then the doshi would bow to it and receive it and put it over the incense and hand it off to the other assistant, and the other assistant would hold it up while the doshi bows and then put it on the altar, and there'd just be this elaborate thing. And then in Japan, there's even, you might see pictures of altars, they have like paper folded in a like a round shape, and there's, you know, there's food offerings in there, and you always eat the, if you put a food offering on an altar, you should always eat it afterwards, not just throw it away. So there's all these, you know, formalities to it, which can be very sweet to learn and participate in. But, you know, if it's like, we don't have a lot of time, it's enough just to have volunteers to, you know, fire up the Zoom and greet people as they come, and open the doors and, you know, turn on the computers. So we don't, you know, really have the time for all that at this point. But as we go, we can start introducing more of that. And again, it's totally optional for what you want to participate in. But what that, you know, it got me to this, the question about particularly funerals. So in Japan, and this doesn't have to be the case here, but in Japan, it tends to be that the Buddhists are associated with death. And it's more Shinto that's associated with like life and weddings and things like that. That's just kind of the phenomenon of Japanese culture and the way their religion has developed. It doesn't have to be the case over here. So we definitely do weddings, but the weddings are a little bit like, we're kind of making that part up. Which is okay, you know, we know how to create ceremonies, we know what the components should be. But funerals and memorials are definitely a deep part of the Buddhist tradition, and particularly the Zen tradition. So we have if what I'm describing here intrigues anyone, and you want to step forward and take the initiative to connect with Dharmarain and learn about how this is done. I would love for this to be something that we could offer one another. So if you were really, you really wanted to go whole hog and like do the whole Buddhist thing, and you are facing death, or maybe somebody you love is facing death, but let's say you are. And you could someday let us know about your wishes, and if it's okay with family members, of course. But as we are approaching death, assuming that we have that forewarning in time, we have a set of exhortations, we call them, that we read to people as they are approaching death. And actually, these are borrowed from the Tibetan tradition. And they're really inspirational, like they're talking about approaching, you know, you're approaching a time of letting go. Just, you know, let go of all of the stuff, all of the regrets, and just, you know, move toward the light, that kind of thing. And, you know, just leap beyond. And we should all probably have written out like our requests for what we want to have happen, right? I don't have that. And I want these read to me as I am dying, you know? Like, I will be really regretful if they're not. And I want people around me chanting and meditating. I don't want people around me watching TV or just blathering on or like, you know, I want practitioners around me. So then at the moment of passing, there's another exhortation that is read. And then afterwards, again, all if you want, Sangha members can wash your body. So I've participated in this a number of times, and it's a very beautiful ceremony. This is often something that like nurses will do at this moment, but instead your friends, loved ones, fellow practitioners do this and wash your body and dress it in a white kimono. So traditionally in Japan, the white is the color of death. So you're freshly in a kimono, and again, if this is something that you want, there is a certain sense in which you are being, you can be ordained at that point. And men are shaved, and there's a ceremony at that deathbed. And then usually the funeral will take place a few days later. For my teacher, Kyogen, they still had him in a cremation box. He was going to be cremated, so it wasn't a fancy coffin. And so there is a funeral ceremony, and what typically is done is somebody stands and takes the precepts again on behalf of the person who has passed. Even if they have taken the precepts before, it's like a renewal of their vow. So there's something really, and also there's more exhortations after the person has died. So there's this neat way where like you're continuing your dialogue with this person, even though they've physically passed. You're not just talking about them, you're addressing them. And so they take the precepts by proxy again. If there is going to be a cremation, then there's a ceremony of like, all of us went into this crematory, not all of us could fit, but a certain of us went into the crematory as Kyogen's body was sent in. And Gyokuko, my teacher, his wife, pressed the button, which was just like, that was too much for me. I had to go into my car and cry. But anyway, it was very powerful. But what was interesting also is that that funeral ceremony, which is usually where things end in our culture, and frankly, I find that deeply unsatisfying. Usually, I mean, COVID has prevented this, but usually the funeral happens just like, okay, you know, several days after, week after, maybe at the most, let's get this show on the road. All right, that's too bad, that's sad, and we're done. And like, it's too fresh and new and shocking for that to really be that helpful. I mean, it's good, but what is typically done then is that 49 days after the person dies, then there is a memorial. And so for Kyogen, this memorial in a way was even bigger. It was an even bigger deal and had some other kinds of rituals and ceremonies associated with it. And that felt much more like, okay, you've had a little bit of time. And there's a sense in Buddhism, again, I'm totally agnostic about this, but there's a sense that a belief that for at least 49 days, this person hangs around. And I think whether you want to literally believe that at any kind of consciousness or energetic level, it's certainly true emotionally. You know, this person is still very, very present within that near future. So, and then basically my teachers have always said, what they tried to instill into me is death trumps everything. So if you're dying, I will come. So that is like, it is such a precious point of transition and such an important point for pastoral support and practice. So there's a lot more that can be developed there. And even at Dharma Rain, we had a box that was packed up and ready to go if needed. Like with a white kimono, a white wagesa, or a white rakusu, depending on whether you have taken Jukai or Zaike Tokudo. And, you know, like, because you never know, and a little portable altar and the chanting books and everything. So it was a thing that was ready to go. So we don't have that, but we would do our best. Any questions about all of that? Judith.
Would that be done in the hospital if the patient were dying in the hospital?
So Judith asked if it would happen in the hospital if the patient were dying in the hospital, and we certainly have done that.
Okay.
It kind of depends on what the hospital will allow or what the family is comfortable with or whatever. So we always work with that. But if everything is like exactly how you want it to be, it basically happens wherever the person dies. So so we did this for somebody who died in hospice, but at the Zen Center. So we did it there, and then Kyogen. I don't know how we swung this, but he was able to, after the body washing, and as he was lying there in the white kimono, we were able to have that like whole, almost like a whole wing of the hospital for the better part of the day. So the whole sangha was able to just come and take turns going in to visit him and cry in the hall and stuff like that. So.
I'd like to ask something or say something.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you brought this particular aspect up because it's actually something that's really been on my heart for a long time, and that is after death care. And I've been fortunate enough when I lived in California to participate in several home and family directed funerals. We used mortuaries for our parents, but we were able to have our own private 3-day wake. We washed them and dressed them, and it was profound. And I've helped do home wakes for friends. I have a close friend who does that. That is her ministry. She educates people on how to do home funerals. And it's really, it's part of my, I have it written into my, and by the way, put this information in your healthcare directive as well, so people don't have to look through your sock drawer to find it, but put what you want in your healthcare directive as well, so people know right away. But I have it in mind that I would like a home wake, if possible, and just all the natural death care that I want. But I realize it is a single, and there are people, and it's legal in Oregon as well, as you know, and there are people who actually specialize in helping you do that. As a single person, and I rent, I don't own, I'm aware that it would be difficult for me to have a home wake. And I would love to see a ministry, maybe this sangha in combination with other sanghas or whatever, but there'd be a real ministry around after death care. And maybe it could also include a safe place to have a wake. I want a 3-day vigil. And I know it can't be at home. So, you know, these are considerations that I have, but just, I just have had it so much on my heart that that be something, that be a consideration, that sort of ministry be a consideration for our sangha. And again, maybe with, along with other sanghas as well. So, but I don't want to be in charge.
Well, it really, I mean, what I think, what I would love to see happen is for a small team of people to decide that this should happen. And then, you know, it's a group of people who get to do it together, to explore it together, which can make it more fun and interesting and easier. Because, yeah, I think it would be just wonderful to offer this, and, you know, to even think about, you know, what can we offer people, you know, out in our Zoomiverse, you know, can we have some kind of fund ready to send a Sangha member out to, you know, be with them or something like that. I love that idea. And like you said, there's many resources out there already. There are other Zen centers that have certain things put together and people doing that ministry and stuff. So it certainly seems like we ought to be able to put something together. I do feel like this is one of the big, one of the big areas where I'm like, duh, we should be developing that. But, you know, like I can only do so much, so it really will have to be with my support and enthusiasm, but it'll have to be with other people's.
Me too. I'll be part of it, not in charge. Anyway.
Cool.
But thank you.
Paula.
Well, I'm really interested in this discussion around death. As many people know, and some don't, my husband passed away in June. And I've had a really hard time over the winter here because it's so isolating. And I was going to write to you about, because I really liked the Dharma talk last week. I was nervous when I came on because I heard you were going to talk about staying with difficult emotions. And I was thinking, oh dear, I hope she doesn't say, and I know you wouldn't, because what attracted me to you was your grief podcast last summer. I read it. I was concerned that, I'm always concerned about being in a safe space when I feel really vulnerable about James passing. So I sometimes stay away from social gatherings when I really probably need them, because I'm worried somebody will say the wrong thing to me. And, so I'm really interested in grief aftercare. And I was going to write to you and ask you if the Sangha had anything like that, or we could put something together, because I can't just go to any Zen center because I don't know what I'm going to get hit with, and I can't filter it out. I don't have the emotional resources to deal with that. And So I resonate with the approach in this sangha to difficult emotions. So I'm interested in learning about any way we could do something for people in grief after losing something.
Thank you for sharing that. And
I'll email you.
And like anybody who wants to follow up, you know, please send me an email, info@brightwayzen, saying, you know, if a team gets pulled together, let me know about it. I might like to be involved. You know, no commitment necessary right away, right? But just, you know, because this stuff won't happen unless you may or may not feel like you are the one or you're capable. But if it's something that calls to you, you know, it's not going to take that much, I think, to make something meaningful happen. We're at 12:15, but Ellen has her hand raised, so let's take one more.
Quickly on this topic, which is very much on my mind too, I've been considering doing the course in contemplative care at the New York Zen Center. I attended there, so I was hoping to bring this home to us here.
Oh, good.
So it starts in September, but on their website, there are some resources on this topic, plenty of them. So anyway, I'll forward you, if you'd like, the recording of the Zoom of the introduction to the coursework. In this, anyway, I found it very interesting, and it's, yeah.
Great. So that's a Zen Center in New York, that they're really focused on hospice care and contemplative care, and all right. And those of you who were on Zoom and you did have a question and you didn't put it in the chat, please, like, put it in the chat before you log off, or send it to me by email, because, like I said, it's great to have these questions to form Dharma Talks around. But in the meantime, I will say our closing verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Domyo.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Domyo.
Do you have a different email?